Today on the agenda we have issue 47, subject property and object terminology, issue 66, scoped and nested contexts, declaration of container on type, container and ID, and prefix and query terminology. Is there anything else that needs to be added to the agenda? Anything else we should discuss?
Okay, can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Nicholas, you're up to scribe. You mind scribing today?
No. Fine.
Okay. Great, thanks. All right, first up on the agenda is issue 47. And this is subject property and object terminology. There's actually been a fairly big discussion on the RDF working group that was kicked off by Richard Siganiak about the terminology that we use and it not aligning with RDF. Greg, you've been the most involved in that conversation. Thanks for kind of picking up the ball and going with that. Could you give us a kind of a quick summary of where you think where you think Richard is right now in his comments?
Well, I think basically there were so many different things we went over. It's really the fact that I think in his opinion we're defining a data model without defining all of the. But I'm getting a lot of feedback, a lot of noise on the channel. Is it just me? Anyway, can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah, I hear some static, but not much.
Yeah.
So
I think part of it is that we seem to define a data model without defining the semantics for it, and I tried to deflect and say, well, you know, really we're not trying to define a data model. It's RDF concepts as a data model, but I'm not very successful in doing that. There are some areas where I think there's some fairly straightforward things we can do. For instance, trying to really be distinct on where we're talking about JSON and where we're talking about sort of the model, and trying to see if we can use the RDF concepts terms as much as possible. In JSON, pretty much talking about JSON objects, values, things like that, which we do, I think, pretty well. Subject reference and subject definition are terms I introduced because we needed something, and I hated them as soon as I did. I suggested perhaps node definition and node reference. Richard came back with some slight variation on that. And it's hard to wade through all of the comments here, but I think that we probably want to go in that direction. Otherwise, I think we have similar things that come up regarding sort of the difference between property and predicate. I think one of the issues is what we mean by graphs. And nodes and how they relate with RDF concepts, graphs, and nodes, in particular when you can have multiple nodes that are that have the same ID. And the only way that we have of reconciling those is the flattening algorithm right now, which is not actually part of either document. So we need to make some claim about that. And otherwise, I think perhaps we just sort of need to go through the points one by one, perhaps in the last email that I put in here from Richard, which interleaves most of the concepts.
Okay. So I guess at a high level, in his first couple of emails, it felt like they were kind of all over the place, and I think that's because he didn't understand. Or he had, you know, three strategies that we were going for, and I think out of those three strategies, we already have agreement that we're just doing one of the strategies, which is, you know, we're trying to align JSON LD with REF terminology as much as we can. And I think he thinks that the data model is more divergent than it actually is. So maybe we could kind of start the discussion with kind of discussing the differences between the data model for JSON LD and RDF, and then kind of going from there, because it seems like everything else kind of falls out of that, some of those core beliefs about the JSON LD data model. So I think Richard's right. I mean, the JSON LD data model is slightly different than RDF. It's less restrictive. And in the beginning, I think we did say, you know, subjects and predicates could be, they don't have to be IRIs. They could be, you know, strings. They could be literals. But we don't really define, you know, there isn't no semantic meaning behind those concepts yet. I think we
contradict ourselves with regards to subjects. And he did find a place where we do say that a subject, I think it's in the initial definitions, be a string, but really no place else in JSON LD. ID is always in expansion. ID is always interpreted as a IRI.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I mean, I guess this comes from the early days of JSON LD, where we didn't want to, you know, restrict it down to RDF. But I have a feeling that, Greg, that's the direction you want to go, and I'm pretty sure Richard definitely wants that to happen. And if we do that, I'm wondering, I'm somewhat concerned of losing that. You know, I've liked that JSON LD is not as restrictive as RDF, and if we're just going to make it a one-to-one mapping to RDF, then you know, all the people that were saying, well, linked data isn't just RDF, it's other things, those people are going to be, you know, kind of annoyed, I think.
Well, frankly, I haven't heard from those people in quite a long time.
Yeah,
and we are part of the RDF working group.
That's true, but I don't think that just because we don't hear from a certain subset of people that that we should just dismiss their concerns, right? I'm mostly raising this as conceptually. I'm not saying that we won't eventually end up restricting, you know, IDs to just IRIs or properties to IRIs.
If we want IDs to be able to be strings, then I think we need an alternative syntax for that. For instance, using a full value there, because basically ID is similar to a property whose the type has always been set to ID,
mm-hmm.
and therefore all the algorithms treat it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But right. The fact that, you know, that there's no data model that allows us to treat that, and it's certainly not dead in the RDF working group. Periodically, people bring that up with regards to Turtle being able to specify strings in the subject place, but
mm-hmm.
I just don't know that that's really our battle.
Mm-hmm. Nicholas, you're on the queue.
Yeah. I was going to say something along the line of these things do come up in RDF discussions, and I come up in the semantic web and linked data mailing lists occasionally for many years, and there have been debates that perhaps we should allow bnodes or plain strings as predicates. More common to discuss that subjects should be allowed to be literals, but those are, from what I've seen, and I've skimmed through a lot of that because it doesn't relate to anything I need. But when I've tried to think about those arguments, I've never really seen them as compelling, because either they are very theoretical and sort of look to extend the RDF data model into something more pure, and it's considered strange to disallow certain constructs like literals as subjects, but I don't think that's a really good argument, because the concept of literals is impure. It's just a practical definition, which you've seen when we discussed, you know, the difference between type and data type and things like that. And frankly, I agree a lot with a lot of what Richard means, what I interpret him to want. I find some of the parts perhaps a little bit too misunderstood, but I think that there is a bit of a danger in leaving the JSON-LD data model too lax, because what I like about RDF in general is that everything is defined. There is no wiggle room for creative local extensions, and that restriction to me means that I can understand any data that I get, and I've compared that to situations in Atom, for instance, where we've seen a lot of growth of IDs around Atom, but they never really, they can't really interoperate properly because they are always tied to a certain application where the actual Atom model is nothing more than a package with no real interoperability in the details. You don't know if a certain construct, well, you're just back to basic XML problems where you don't know what an attribute means. And I fear that we might end up with the same situation if we say that undefined terms which are not bound to vocab may mean something semantically. I can understand that we want to have certain very application-specific mechanics there for internal use, but I'd rather that we say that they are dropped entirely from the level of semantics. I see them more as structured code comments than semantics that extend the RDF model.
Yeah, so I think, I mean, at a high level, I agree. I'm certainly, I can certainly see the arguments that Richard is making and you're making and Greg as well. Just to talk to a bit about the you know, pure theoretical stuff where, you know, predicates are strings and subjects can be strings, that being theoretical. I don't see it the same way. I think JSON is a perfect example of that not being just theoretical. People use text strings as subjects and text strings as predicates all the time. It's just that they don't have a mapping to RDF because RDF doesn't support that kind of stuff. So I don't know if it's necessarily fair to say that this is a purely theoretical discussion. Now, that said, I don't. If it doesn't have a mapping to RDF, I don't know what else it could have a mapping to. I mean, we don't have an alternative data model for linked data. So we could say that, well, yes, you know, you can have strings as subjects and strings as properties, but when you do that, JSON-LD doesn't understand it because the underlying data model, that the only data model that can be translated to in JSON-LD is RDF. And so if someone comes up with a different data model in the future, there will be a future to, you know, let's say QDF or whatever data format, you know, there'll be a 2QDF call, and that, if that data model supports strings and in the subject and the predicate position, then we can support it at that point. But until that happens, I guess we'll say that, you know, a JSON-LD document, you know, must have, you know, the subject must evaluate to an IRI, the predicate must evaluate to an IRI. Greg, you're on the queue.
Yeah, a couple of points in there. One, with regard to, for instance, predicates, the language we have is predicate or property should be an IRI and not must. And that, I think, was taken to mean that, oh, okay, well, it could be a B node, for instance. And I think that was part of Richard's rejections. When I went back and looked, I'd sort of misattributed that to Kingsley for some reason. But, in fact, it was Glenn McDonald that objected to it being an IRI. And I think what he really objected to was that it really be bound to anything, that there's value in being able to have properties that are just strings for statement, as you might do in JSON-LD. And from that perspective, well, the data model doesn't support it, but the language supports it in the sense that if you can have a JSON document with a property that does not expand to an absolute IRI, and you can state that within the document, it just is not a it is dropped when we expand.
Mm-hmm.
So it's consistent with other places where we talk about the ability to express things that aren't JSON-LD, but still being able to say, you know, must for a number of different types of things. For instance, having extra keys inside of a expanded term definition. They must not be there, but if they are, you know, we'll use it and we'll just drop them. So I think we could say the similar thing about, say, properties, and for that matter, about IDs that are strings, in the sense that they do not evaluate to absolute IRIs when expanded. And I think that would sort of solve a lot of issues. Yes, you can express all of that in JSON-LD. They are dropped using the algorithms, but there's nothing to prevent you from expressing that.
Okay. Well, are you saying then that it should be a should or a must?
I'm saying it should be a must, but we already have weasel room on that by saying there's other things that are musts but a JSON document will be processed. And it just will throw away things that don't match the sort of the must constraints.
Okay. Nicholas,
so it allows it to be expressed.
All right.
I had one more point in there.
No, sorry.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
With regards to strings as or literals as subjects, it is not entirely theoretical, and notation 3 allows you to do that. And in fact, it's used by some of the compiler stuff that I've made use of, where they actually use that for determining production. So you can have a terminal expressed as a string that then has properties. And so it actually is used in those cases. Now, they could be used, and there's other ways to do that, but it's not entirely theoretical to have strings as subjects. It's just that it's not part of the RDF model. It may be at some point. And the good news is, if it is, then it's easy enough for us to accommodate that in the future.
Nicholas.
Yeah, that's true. And I really didn't mean, I mean, the theoretical thing was about the current arguments to why these should be part of RDF. I've seen them in notation 3 as well, and I know that JSON, well, it depends on how you want to interpret JSON. I mean, the problem is that we don't say anything about that, and I think that Richard is very unsure, and understandably so, about whether we support a model which is more akin to notation three, where you can have B nodes as predicates and literals as subjects and things like that. But we aren't clear about that. And we say that we might want to be able to have JSON-LD be mapped to that. But we say a lot of mights and possibles, and I think that's, we should iron that out into something clearly stated somehow. Maybe we should say that the JSON-LD data model supports these things and that they aren't translatable to RDF. If we don't, we should say that we only support things that are translatable to RDF, and every other expression is explicitly dropped. But the impression seems to be that we're somewhere in between those two decisions.
I think the problem is if we define a larger data model without providing the semantics for it, which is really, from what I've seen in the RDF working group where we're talking about semantics, is a real hairy knot.
Yeah.
So I'm fine with basically changing the language so that we do say that. So I'm fine with changing the language so that we constrain what is understood as linked data in JSON-LD now. So if we constrain it now, the idea that we could expand it later on will hopefully still, it's still possible to kind of expand it. So for example, you know, let's say that we say ID must be an IRI and any term must expand to an IRI. We could put in features in the future that is something like at SID, which is a string ID. Right, that would allow you to specify a plain text. I'm not saying this is the best solution. I'm saying it's a possible potential modification if we wanted to support strings as subjects and strings as properties in the future. The same thing with properties. If we wanted a term to be understood as a string, we would, in the context definition, say term foo, and then we would say it's instead of ID, we would do at SID and give it the string that it should expand to, which would probably just be foo. So doing that, we could support a more inclusive data model than RDF. But we don't have to put that functionality in today, and we can restrict the language today to make folks like Richard and the some of the other folks in the RDF working group happy. Does that seem like a acceptable path forward? So the general idea is that we will try and constrain the language a bit more, describe the data model a bit more in the beginning, and try and align as much with RDF terminology as possible without confusing things. And note that we're doing this while also keeping open the idea that we could support literals as subjects and literals as properties in the future. Nicholas, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I like that. I think that should clear up the misunderstandings, because what we do then is to ensure that nobody can locally define the semantics to mean something more. Without understanding, but they can always do that, but it's stated in the JSON-LD definition that strings as subjects, for instance, are not allowed at this point, so that if they intend for them to mean that, anybody who tries that will know that until JSON-LD decides to support that, it doesn't. Right now it might be implied by the forms that we syntactically allow that we actually may already support them. But this should clear up that confusion, I hope. I believe that should address the concerns that Richard has, that it's unclear if we are more like a notation 3 format than a turtle format, if you will.
Okay. Greg, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I think it's sort of inevitable that we do this, and it's really would just make our lives much easier. However, it can be viewed as a controversial thing to do. I think we probably, before actually going ahead and making those changes, we should put a note out to public JSON or public link JSON and RDF comments describing what we're going to do and why, and solicit some comments before we do that, to give people that might have a stake in that a chance to speak up.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a good idea. Okay. Is there any disagreement on this general approach? I think it's, you know, the devil is in the details, so we're going to have to actually see the final proposal to understand what we're actually changing. There is also a discussion about subject property and object, the terminology that we're using, and it being confusing. Marcus, you had originally raised this concern. Do you have any suggestion on what we should change subject, property, and object to? I mean, one thing that's come up is subject should be node definition, and then property, and then object might be node reference.
Yeah, I would be fine in calling subject and object nodes. I think that was the thing I proposed initially. And properties, I mean, that still holds, but might change if we are going to introduce subject maps. So then not all properties, all JSON properties are predicates anymore. So we might have to, I don't know, reconsider that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess we can cross that bridge when we come to it.
What it does now, JSON calls the property position in an object a key. Is that correct?
I'm not sure. I know people call them keys.
I've called them keys.
Right. I know people that have called them properties as well. But that's when you look at it with, you know, kind of object-oriented glasses. I don't know what JSON spec calls it.
Actually, let's see. Object
key lists, they say, but that's the only reference to.
Well, it says object is an ordered. I see an object is an ordered set of name value pairs.
Name.
Yeah.
Value.
So name would be.
And name.
Kind of,
is those
are very satisfactory.
I think that's confusing.
Yeah. I think if we define our terms and say that when we refer to property, we're referring to the key position in a JSON object.
Yep.
Whose interpretation in JSON-LD is, whose semantics are equivalent to that of an RDF predicate.
Mm-hmm.
And that allows us, you know, cover room to use property to define very closely what we mean and
right.
Not sort of get into a lot of these issues. And otherwise, in terms of subject and object, just referring to them as nodes is quite accurate with respect to what we're doing.
Okay. But we do want to differentiate between a node definition and a node reference, right?
Correct. Now, there was a slightly different phrase that Richard came up with, and I'm trying to find it in the middle of all of this. That was me. Oh, I see. He thinks of them as node object and reference object instead of node definition
object
and node reference.
That's a little more confusing to me.
Between those two?
Yeah.
Marcus, we do need to differentiate between those two because what's the triple composed of? We have to be able to say what the triple is composed of.
But we have to talk about triples.
In two places in the document we do.
The problem is, I think, that the more hard problem is that we allow, if we say that the node object or the node definition is the node, then two nodes can have the same ID, and I don't think we mean that. I was thinking along the lines of a node description, which is a JSON object.
I'm not sure I follow you.
I don't know that really is distinct enough. I think the concern is that if we say it's a node definition, that implies that it includes all of the statements about that node. Where you might have multiple JSON objects with the same ID and perhaps overlapping property definitions. And from the data model perspective, the node is the union of all of that information, right, of all of those statements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we need to be clear that we say that.
Yes. That's just language, right? I mean, I think we could, add two sentences in there and be crystal clear about what we mean by that.
But what do you say? From a data model perspective, the node is the union of all the descriptions. What did you say? All the...
Well, I said statements. But all of the... I guess it is... I mean, we could actually describe an algorithm easily enough, right, which is basically it is the merger of all of the properties defined in each node where the values are merged together into an array with, and that's where we sort of get into the set notation imply there's no repetition.
Yeah, I think that what my problem is, and the Richard's possibly... is that it's unclear what we mean with the node and the JSON object in a similar way to RDFXML, where you have an element which has an RDF about. And the element is certainly not a resource, but it's a syntactic construct. And if we name the syntactic construct of a JSON object with an ID key, a node, and if we equate them, we have a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know if we're really doing that, though, right? I mean, maybe there's an assumption you're making, Nicholas, that I'm not making. Are you saying that we're moving away from the node definition and node reference terminology and we're just using node? Because in my mind, we have three things when it comes to node. We have the actual node itself, which is just the data model. There's no syntactic convention for that, right?
Yeah.
So we have nodes. And then when it comes to the syntax, we have node definitions and node references. And so a node is composed of all of the node definitions for the same ID, right? It's a merger of all the node definitions for the same ID. So I think that addresses Richard's issue, and I think that addresses the concern you're talking about as well. Is that
A node reference then refers to that sort of virtual merged node?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Go ahead.
We could say, I don't know if it's better or worse, but I mean, a node reference is a node definition with just an ID. So it's more of what the role is for that syntactic piece of data.
Yeah, I mean, that pushes us more towards a cleaner theoretical description, but I think it's going to be more difficult for people to understand that, right, rather than saying, you know, a node reference is just a pointer to something. It just refers to a node out there with the same ID. And leave it at that.
It happens to use the syntax of ID, but yeah, it should be obvious. I mean, if you read the definitions for how you write them, what I said will be implied, but we don't have to state it.
Right.
I think if we do this, we need to add a flattening API method. That's normative.
I'm concerned about doing that because it's going to eat up a bit of time, and I don't think it's necessary to explain the model. I don't think it's necessary to have a flattening algorithm to explain the model. I think we can explain it in a couple of sentences. If necessary, we could explain it in, you know, a paragraph or two in the JSON-LD data model section. So I disagree that it's necessary for us to have a flattening algorithm in order to explain this. I do agree that it would be nice to have a flattening algorithm, I think, in the API, but I think that is a parallel.
Well, we do have a flattening algorithm. It just isn't in the API document. It's in the framing document.
Right.
I think, Marcus, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you completed that algorithm description.
Yeah. Yeah, complete.
Okay. If it's complete,
object math generation. So we would need to move both over.
Right. Wait, it's based on subject. Oh. I see what you're saying.
Subject maps, right? And subject maps that sort of gets into
framing.
The ID map, the whole ID map thing, which is still an open issue.
But that's how it's implemented. You could say that syntactically you don't... I mean, the algorithm uses a map by necessity, but you could use it
internally.
Yeah, then you could put the values as the array of the graph.
Yeah, so the last step of the algorithm could be to just extract the values from that map into an array, right?
Yeah, that's what the flattening algorithm does currently.
Yeah.
So you get back an algorithm of node definitions, basically.
I do think it's going to be useful for us to have that map notation. But that's a different issue.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So let's wind up a couple of levels on the stack. I think we have agreement that we rename subject to node definition, keep property as is, and rename object to node reference. Any disagreement on that?
I'm writing it up.
Okay, great. So once we have that proposal down,
talking about node definitions and node references, is that just for the algorithms or for the data model?
It's for everything. I mean, when we change it, we're going to have to refer, you know, if that's the terminology we're using, it depends. I mean, if the algorithm can be explained more succinctly by using different terminology, we should do that. But I think what we're striving for is to use the same terminology throughout all of the documents, both JSON-LD syntax and the JSON-LD API document. So I think the answer to your question is it depends on how cleanly we can kind of reuse the terminology. And if we can't cleanly reuse the terminology, we will have to create new terminology for the JSON-LD API. Did that answer your question, Marcus?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, for the data model, we don't necessarily need to distinguish between the two, so we could keep it simpler and just talk about nodes there. But
I disagree. I think it would confuse people if we tried to keep it too simple in the data model. I think we need to specify the terminology up front. Because if we don't do that, I'm concerned that Richard's going to continue to have the same issue that he has right now, which is we're not clear about, you know, what terminology we're using, how we're talking about the data model.
Well, but the problem I see is that a node reference is not equal to an object in a triple. So I don't know what kind of value it really gives us when we talk about the data model. That's my concern.
Well, I thought they were. I see them as an almost. Oh, I see what you're saying. You're saying that a node reference isn't the only thing that can appear in the last position. You could also have a literal there.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, but in RDF, it's an IRI literal or a B node.
Right.
And IRI means the name of that node, a specific universally available name for a node.
Didn't Richard say that in the abstract RDF model, the node is the IRI?
Yeah, it said that. So it's not a name, It is the IRI, I think he said.
Right.
Right.
And he also suggested that we might use node here differently. I didn't really interpret what he said as being opposed to it, but I think that he mentioned that it seems that we use node to describe, well, the thing represented by the IRI.
Well, we usually set a node is labeled by an IRI, so the node is something different than the IRI.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that was his problem.
I prefer what we do rather than what he's done.
Yeah.
Frankly. But,
yeah,
I
agree. I think the way that they've done it is confusing.
But that's the, you know, if that's the data model, then we just need to be clear up front that this is what it means. They mean the same thing. So it's not, we can refer to it as a label for it, but what we mean is that these semantics are equivalent to RDF and that it, in that sense, it is an IRI.
Right.
Or a B node or a value being a literal.
Right, but I guess what Marcus's point is that saying that the third position is a node reference doesn't quite capture it.
I don't think we've decided to say that the third position is a node reference, but rather a property value may include a node reference, just as it may include a a value or literal value. Now, and a node reference may reference either an IRI or a B node.
I see what you're saying. Okay, so the third position can be a node reference or a literal.
Well,
we don't use literal, but
what do we use? I forget what we use.
I think we are mixing two things at the moment, because in the data model we are talking about subjects and objects, and currently we are discussing about subject references and subject definitions.
Well, I think the subject is changing to node definition.
And what is
we just resolved
changing
that.
To?
Right. Sorry, Marcus.
Do we change object as well to node, or do we keep object?
Yeah, I think that's what we're currently discussing.
The resolution was subject definition is renamed to node definition. Subject reference is renamed to node reference. That's what we resolve.
We never talk about subject references or definitions.
Excuse me?
In the data model, where we define our data model, we never talk about subject definitions or subject references.
No, we talk about subjects and objects.
Yeah.
But we should instead be talking about nodes, right?
That's what I'm asking, basically, yeah. So do we change object as well to just node?
Say, a subject is any node in a linked data graph with at least one outgoing edge. A subject should be labeled with an IRI. An object is any node in a linked data graph with at least one incoming edge. It may be labeled with an IRI. It is not an IRI, such as plain text, etc.
I think
a node may be a subject and an object at the same time.
Isn't that the language that Richard complained about us having redefined all these years of RDF terminology?
I guess the concern here is that, we went through 3 months to come up with this definition, and I do think that this definition is easier to understand than the way RDF is presented right now. So what we could do is we could change, subject and object to use different words. But the problem with that, I'm guessing, is that Richard still thinks that we have a different data model. What we could also do is we could explain RDF in this way, but at that point we throw away this definition of linked data, and we're basically saying that linked data is RDF, which is not true.
The problem with that statement that it's not true is that nobody has really presented something other defined which is linked data.
Well,
RDF is not necessarily the only thing that is linked data.
Right.
I think the main issue is that subjects and objects are not things in RDF. Subjects and objects are positions in a tuple. Whereas here we say a subject is a node. And there maybe is some wiggle room around that. We could just, instead of talking about subjects and objects, just talk about nodes. Nodes in a linked data graph may have either incoming or outgoing edges.
What about if we just say nodes which are IRIs or blank nodes may have outgoing edges? And
a node with outgoing edges must be, we say labeled with an IRI or a B node, or we could say be an IRI or a B node, which would satisfy.
Yeah, so we should say labeled with. Here's the issue, though. We refer to subject 76 times in the document. By definition, we refer to object 43 times in the document. So we use that terminology throughout the document.
Well, but a lot of those matches are subject definition, subject reference, and JSON object. So I don't know if it's that much.
Subject reference. 7 are subject reference. 49 are subject definition.
Yeah, so it's not that bad.
Yeah, I'm just this is the worst time to be changing the core terminology for the document. But I guess we have to do it because I can see this resulting in some kind of formal objection.
Yeah, to some extent, it's our definition is easier to understand to a certain extent, more or less intuitively, but I believe that the RDF definition and the RDF abstract syntax is simpler because it sort of defines the glyph mechanics of expressing a graph. And the interpretation of that is at another level above that. So it's very much more like mathematical notation and defining the core of the mathematical language. And then you have meaning upon that. We sort of have meaning added into the model itself. The node is the meaning and not the data. It's the same thing as the difference between data and information.
I don't know if I quite agree with that. I guess the problem I have with that statement, Nicholas, is that I don't know what to do with it. I don't know how that statement can simplify what we have here into something concrete, right?
I don't know either. I'm just thinking that perhaps that might be fine if we understand that and express that we don't talk about the painting on the wall or the how to draw the graph in the abstract manner, but we actually talk about the graph in our definition of linked data. So it might be a way to make Richard understand how we approach the description of what we are describing. We don't work at the same abstract theoretical level of the glyph mechanics of IRIs, V-nodes, and literals, but actually talk about the things they denote.
Right. Well, I think at the end of the day, though, his argument is going to be, well, then don't use the same terminology, because it's going to confuse people.
Yeah, that might be true.
But so the only way out of this that I can see right now is changing the terminology such that it's a parallel to the RDF terminology, and the counter-argument against that is going to be, well, you've just reinvented RDF, right?
Yeah. But to me, the JSON-LD model is a bit more like what we get when we use connect or link, which we haven't defined, but which we all think about. And that thing that we end up with in memory, usually, that is the data graph. It's not the knowledge graph. It corresponds to that. But in the data graph, we can have these keys floating around, which aren't defined as terms bound to IRIs. We can still have them within that object interconnected in memory. And somewhere there we have the difference between what Richard is talking about with RDF and what we talk about with the thing we describe, which we call linked data. And I can understand that there is conceptual problems here.
I think if you were to take this definition by itself, pretend that RDF doesn't exist right now. So just pretend RDF doesn't exist at all. If you looked at the linked data definition, I feel it's pretty clear. Meaning, I mean, we could change all the bolded words to, you know, A, B, C, and D. You would still be able to kind of imagine what this thing is. Regardless of the terminology that we use. So, I mean, we are describing a directed graph, right, and how to specify labels on nodes and edges for that directed graph. So I don't think it gets much simpler than that. I think the issue here is that RDF exists, and they want some kind of, you know, parallel drawn to RDF.
Well,
Yeah, but from the other perspective, this is RDF. And therefore, if it uses different terminology to describe what are theoretically the same things, then it leaves room for ambiguity and misunderstanding. So by using the same concepts, the same terminology, we remove that, at least that level of ability to misinterpret.
Mm-hmm. I guess I guess my confusion is that, you know, well, if we change property to predicate, doesn't that match up with RDF?
Well, we could do that, and I think when we're talking about sort of the edge in a graph, then from an RDF concept perspective, that's a predicate or a verb. But when we're talking about the concrete syntax, the JSON, we can refer to it as property because now we're talking about syntactic elements.
Yeah, but I think
so. As long as we stick to the same sort of domain, then I think we're okay.
I guess my concern about that approach is that people that don't know anything about RDF nor care anything about RDF reading this document would get very confused because of all of the terminology we're using, right?
Well, you're going to confuse people that are coming to it, and we're giving them new definitions that we just are, perhaps our personal opinions are that they're opaque, or you're going to risk confusion with the underlying data model. I mean, once we decided basically to become part of the RDF working group, we pretty much cast our lot with that whole thing. And by trying to get a different course, well, by trying to do a different course, it's possible, and I think part of what Richard is saying is, if you're going to do that, then you need to very carefully describe your semantics.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like now it's, okay, we're describing a model which is a alternate universe version of RDF where we're quite explicit about what all of these different things mean. I just think that's a difficult thing to do. And I don't know that there's really much value in that, particularly if we can try to reduce the confusion by talking about syntactic forms in the terms that we choose.
As with Nicholas's comment, I don't really know what to do with that. Like, how do we take that and modify the document?
I think that we don't. That's exactly our problem. We don't know. My sentiment right now is that somehow, I wish I could express more direct wording, but I think that what we said so far should be taken back to Richard, and we should work with him. I think that we need to work at a bunch of iterations with the RDF working group in general, represented by his position on our term, use of the terms. Because I hope that we can find the common ground, that maybe it will be fine if we clearly say what it is that we are describing. We are more describing the usable living data resulting from our definition of linked data. It's tangible, but perhaps the somewhere in between the abstract triple syntax and the interpreted knowledge, which may be okay or it may be dangerous for the path that we try to represent with JSON-LD towards RDF.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I mean, then that's just, we should probably just have a very long discussion with Richard about what the changes should be. Maybe I'll try to set up a phone call with him later in this week where we can kind of talk about this stuff at length with him.
I think that we are very close to, I mean, we almost mean the same things. And if you can just find exactly where we really don't mean the same things, we might be better off. Right now we're trying to see what we can equate instead of finding where we differ. And since we've said that we want JSON-LD to be a path towards RDF without all the theory up front, it might be that, I mean, I think that Richard thinks that that might be a false goal, because if you really understand RDF, there is nothing between here and there, because the simplicity of RDF is as simple as it can be.
I mean, I go back to when I was learning RDF and all the WTF moments I had, and I don't know if it is as simple as people are saying. Yes, the RDF data model is very simple, but, you know, are we going to, that, does that mean that people have to read RDF concepts to understand JSON-LD? If so, I think that's a losing position to put ourselves in, I think. I think if we can't summarize this thing in, you know, a 10 item bullet list, then it doesn't do what at least I would like it to do, which is really quick introduction to linked data. Okay, now that you have that, let's go on. Right.
Yeah, I agree with that, and that's a very good argument to put forward. That's a counter argument to the claim that RDF is simple, and there is nothing simpler to present it with, because, well, the RDF concepts, they are simple if your mind is so crystal clear about exactly what is denoted and what is the data and the all these concepts, which are, well, they are simple in a very intellectual manner, but that does mean that they are very hard to approach from a web developer perspective most of the time. If we don't want to turn every web developer into a philosophy scholar, we have to.
Right.
What we sort of need is an RDF concepts light. I think the important thing is that we not contradict RDF concepts. And so that it can be clear for someone that understands RDF concepts that we are describing the same thing.
Yeah, Marcus, they have said property in a number of places in RDF concepts in the past, but for whatever reason, they insist that it's predicate. I mean, the predicate is the by the English definition of predicate. Predicate is more accurate to what it
predicate
is
like.
Is.
Predicate is like subject and object. It's position in a triple. The predicate denotes the property, is the way I understood it.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's see. All right, so I guess let's go ahead and table this until we can talk to Richard. Maybe we can have more of a discussion on the RDF working group mailing list about this as well. But I don't think we can really make much more progress than we have today on this.
What about if we try to draft that that linked data definition that we have by removing subject and object and replacing that with just nodes and saying that, well, instead of subject, we say uh, just an IRI and a blank node can have an outgoing edge, whereas a literal can just have an ingoing edge, for example, in the graph. Something along the lines.
I don't disagree with that. I guess we end up... So an object is a node in a linked data graph with at least one incoming edge. What are we replacing an object with? I'm looking at number 5. So a blank is a node in a linked data graph. Do we remove number 5 completely and say a node may be labeled with an IRI or label that is not an IRI, such as plain text? A node with an incoming edge
may be
labeled...
a literal, an IRI, or a blank node. And a node with an outgoing edge must be an IRI or a blank node.
And a property must be an IRI.
Yeah, or a blank node.
Okay.
I don't know. Yeah.
Well, that,
yeah,
no. I mean, if it's RDF, it may not be a blank node. And I don't see any compelling reason for it to be a blank node. There's a more compelling reason for it to not be either. And that's sort of where we get, you know, the difference between the concrete and the abstract, I guess. In a concrete syntax, it could be a text, but in the abstract, it cannot be a literal.
Mm-hmm.
And text is a syntactic thing versus literal is a data model thing.
Okay. Well, let's go. Marcus, I think it would be good for you to type that up and send it to the RDF working group as a kind of a just to test the waters, and then we should also talk.
I think it might be worth. I'm sorry. I think it might be worth updating the document with an issue marker to this issue, and describing what our proposed changes to the model are, because that'll put it right up at front and close it, for everyone to be able to see in context.
Yeah,
I can do that. So basically, I rewrite it and put it into the issue marker.
Yeah.
The proposed change.
Yeah. And yep. With regards to this issue, we're apparently referencing 136, but. Pretty similar to 47.
Yeah.
So probably an issue marker for each of them.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll do that.
Okay. Thanks, Marcus.
Which numbers were they?
47 and 136.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's go ahead and jump on to the next issue. And hopefully we can get Richard into the discussion at some point in the future. All right. Issue 66, scope and nested context. Hopefully this is an easy one. So I think this was raised by Dave Lane. He said the external context section briefly mentions nested contexts. We may want to use the terminology scoped instead of nested. Many languages use scope. So
I think part of the advantage of doing this is that there's an alternative discussion about nested context in terms of a single context that includes nesting, rather than the use of contexts in different scopes. So I think I agree with this in order to be able to keep them distinct.
Yeah, but I guess the concern I have is that I don't think that, at least I didn't have any inclination to support the, you know, scope context, which is context within context. It just seems like a added complexity to JSON LD that we don't really need right now. I know one person's asked for it, but...
Well, I can understand. I saw it come up, I think, another time, and I'm sort of have some sympathy for it if you consider that you might not have the ability to... You're using an external context using a link header. to describe existing JSON. And if that's one of our goals, is to be able to basically apply a context and then to existing JSON, then you sort of need to be able to do that in a single context rather than modifying the JSON to include these scoped contexts.
Yeah, I think those use cases we just don't support, or at least my preference would be to not support those use cases, because I would expect they're few and far between compared to all of the data that JSON-LD could work with, all the currently existing JSON data. Mostly, I don't want to support it because it's a huge complexity to how you understand the context.
Well, we already agreed to not support it, but I think that it's useful to leave space for it so that if we do in the future, you know, we don't have a terminology issue.
Right. Okay. Yes, I agree with that. So let's see, scoped instead of nested. Which one do we want to call it? Scoped? It should be test of scoped context.
I think a scoped context implies it's a context that works within some scope of the document.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the terminology would be to use the term scoped when referring to contexts that exist inside of JSON objects.
What do we call it now? Nested?
I don't know what we call it now. This is external contexts. External contexts.
Well, we do say an author may nest contexts within subject definitions with more deeply nested contexts. Overriding values, and that's actually not a very clear sentence, is it? So we do say nested.
Yeah, and it's only in those sections. So the idea is to change that to some kind of scope language.
We could say an author may include context within no definitions to establish a scope for which that context is in use.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. Okay. So does this issue seem pretty straightforward? We change the nested terminology to scoped for contexts that are included in JSON objects. Referring to contexts that exist inside So is that okay? So that's resolved. Great. Next issue up is... Ooh.
Hang on a sec. Just in that issue, David Lane also asked if we should split that into a separate section, so not include it in external context, but create a separate named section for that. Do you want to do that?
I guess it technically should be in a separate section, shouldn't it?
I think so.
Okay. So let's.
Or should we just move it to like where we introduce contexts in general? Because it's not. I mean, it doesn't have anything to do with external context, but with context in general.
It does, but it's more of an advanced usage, certainly. So, I think it probably should go in the advanced section.
Yeah. Okay, so should also, let's see, so we should also split the description of scoped context into its own section in the advanced section.
Well, actually, we already described that in the context section.
Maybe we shouldn't.
It's just under example 4.
Where do we... I'm not saying it.
It's
context may be specified in line.
Context may be used at any time a subject definition is defined. It's directly under example 4.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say then we could move that to the advanced section.
Or we just add...
Yeah, on the other hand, it's just one paragraph. Yeah.
I mean, it's really, yeah, it's just two sentences, three sentences.
Yeah.
Four.
Yeah, let's just clarify the language here. Because otherwise, we're just adding links to a document that doesn't really add any greater understanding.
All right. Yeah. I mean, I think that's editorial. Whoever ends up editing it should try and see what makes the most amount of sense. I don't think we need to discuss it in depth. Any disagreement with that before we move on?
No, that's fine.
Okay. Declaring container on type. Okay, so the next up is issue 122. We have 11 minutes left. Declaring container on type. Here's the link to the issue. All right, so Josh Mandel raised this, and this applies to both the syntax and the API spec. For consistent framing, he sometimes wants to force an object's type into an array. This would mean allowing a context like type container set. Let's see, Greg, you said that you were a plus one to allowing container set on type to force the type to be an array, I guess? But I'm guessing...
Well, the reason for it is so that when you're accessing the data, you always know that the type is going to be expressed as an array, so you don't have to... I mean, so much of my code is wrapped where I wrap the property in an array and then flatten it.
Mm-hmm.
And this, you know, that actually isn't such a bad way to deal with things, but it's not unreasonable to know that it is always going to be an array.
Mm-hmm.
Although, does that mean if there are no types defined that it would exist as an empty array? Or just wouldn't exist at all?
It doesn't for container set in general, right?
No.
That would be pretty...
Yeah,
exciting.
Container set doesn't allow you to express empty arrays.
Right.
No, I think the key is if exists loop over it or access item 0.
Yeah. But alternatively, you wrap in an array, you flatten and compact it. And it has the same effect.
Right.
I think it's for compaction.
I'm concerned about adding special cases to context processing and the other algorithms. If it fell out of the general ability to use container set, then it wouldn't be so bad. But if it's like adding extra lines to the algorithms, I'm not sure it's worth the benefit.
I agree. Yeah, I think I'd rather not support this.
It does make it less less predictable if we don't support it. But I'm not sure that this is the best way to support it. It might be better to have something in compaction saying always wrap single values in arrays, just as we do for expansion.
Well, it's either that or the JSON-LD. I think our JSON-LD processor, our JavaScript one, has the ability to ask whether something exists, whether a property exists, and it is equivalent to a particular value. So I think it's like JSON-LD dot has value, and then you specify like type, and then you do comma, and then the value. So it'll do all of the fancy checking for you. So you just make the call to the API. So it could be that instead of supporting this, we just have an API method that's capable of going in and checking to see what whether or not the value exists.
I don't think that goes with the ideal of being able to use compact JSON as just JSON, because you shouldn't need to use the result with an API.
I think the typical case is that there's going to be a single type. And when there's not, I often will remove extra types in order to get down to a single type.
Lots of RDF contains multiple types, which are necessary for mutation.
What about adding a flag to not optimize those one array, that one element, arrays that have just one element, to like scalars?
Yeah, I'm a bit into that, and I think that it might be good to just do the same thing as we do with expansion. So not just for type, but for any value, because if you look at the microdata data, that's the same thing you get from that. Everything is in an array.
Yeah, and that would be rather trivial to implement if we just have a flag there.
I think that's the way to do it.
So basically this would convert every value associated with a key into an array when you get it back, when you compact it.
Yeah, basically you turn off that optimization, which converts arrays with just one element to a scalar.
Yeah, I'm not sure what would happen. I really don't think that things explicitly coerced to lists should be wrapped in a list, so that we have a list in a list. So
I
just
agree. Hold on. Going back to Nicholas's argument that you shouldn't need the JSON-LD API to just use it as is. I mean, we're just saying, okay, well, we have the compact call has a flag, so you do need the JSON-LD API to get this to work for you.
No,
right?
Well, what I said was that you don't need the API to use the result of compaction. I don't have a problem with the flag to the compact call itself. I can do that as a publisher, then my consumers always use first items from anything.
Mm-hmm.
If I build a data service, for instance, or throw things into Elasticsearch or whatnot.
Yeah, I guess I mean we wouldn't publish data like that ever. I mean, I know that this allows it to be up to the publisher, but I'm wondering how many publishers would express all of their data as arrays.
Well, I mean, by default, we could turn that flag off, but at least it's there if someone needs it.
Yeah.
I guess the
problem I don't see the difference between doing this and creating an accessor mechanism that checks to see if it's a scalar value, and if it's not, it goes through the all the items in the array, checking to see if it exists.
Well, you have to do the check just once instead of doing it for every property you're accessing, for example. So it's done once while compacting and not for every property you're going to access.
Yeah. I have that problem when I publish data in an API for consumers, which very much drove the at set keyword forward from my point of view in general. And as I used, haven't used type in that data, but uses the a term bound to the RDF type IRI, I coerce that. I use container set for that. That's a way to solve this, of course, that you don't use at type, but you use the expanded RDF type bound to a term and container set for that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so does there, it seems like consensus is behind just adding a flag to the compact call that says don't optimize arrays into arrays with one item into single scalar values. And we think that that addresses this issue?
I think so.
Would you have the same flag passed to framing as well?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So the proposal is add a flag to the compact and frame algorithms that turns off optimization of arrays with single items in them to single scalar, single values in the outputs.
I don't know if I should suggest this before or after, because I really don't know if it's a good idea, but another option which would be much more complex to implement would be to be able to say in the context something like at set is true, and that would turn on this, and if we had that, someone might to want to use container colon false to say that this will be a singular value all the time.
I'd rather not do that. Mostly because it's just another addition to the complexity of the declarative syntax. I guess the reason being is that I'm not convinced that we really need this feature in the first place, and so putting in something like that into the declarative syntax, at least to me, is a signal that this is a feature that's used very often, and I'm not convinced that it is going to be that. So I'd be minus one to that proposal.
To some extent, I was when I produced compact SLD from RDFA in that experiment, I always put the values in arrays because that way it would be predictable and sort of isomorphic to microdata JSON. That would be solved by the flag, of course.
Yeah. So I think the flag is a simpler solution. Right.
Yeah.
The proposal.
And I mean, if you, apart from type, you can control everything else inversely by saying set explicitly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I don't know if people are really going to go to that trouble. I think that they'd much rather just set a flag in compact than have to go into the context and specify that every single one is a set. Right?
Yeah. That's why perhaps in the context being able to say set true for sort of a global kind of like language globally, well, not globally, but at the top level of the context, we have language, but we can have language within.
Well, I think you would
course,
say
that,
at,
that would mean
at,
container.
You set. Might say container set at the top level.
At the top
like
level.
Like you say
yeah.
Language
yeah.
SW or something like that.
Yes.
Okay, so are there any stronger feelings on that proposal over just adding a flag to compact and frame, Greg, Marcus?
Well, I think having a flag is much simpler, in my opinion.
I agree.
Yeah, I think so. We could always adding a flag is easy to do if we if there's a call for adding something like container set. Then we can address that later on. I think what the problem with doing that is, then you might think, well, anything that's in the value, can I do container language? Can I do container list? So it's not symmetric.
Right. Francois, you're on the queue. Hold on.
So I'm going to show my ignorance.
Hold on, start over, Francois.
Oh,
you were muted.
Okay, sorry. I'm afraid I'm going to show my ignorance as well, as usual. But this solution seems to be an all or nothing solution, where through compaction, I'm either going to get some properties with scalar values when there's only one, or properties with arrays, whatever the property data I deal with on a daily basis. There exist properties that really don't make sense with They don't need an array to be in an array. I know for a fact that they're going to be unique, such as the gender of a person, for instance. So if I got the proposal correctly, it wouldn't be possible to have an in-between solution where you have some properties compacted to scalar values and properties compacted to array values.
I think there is an in-between solution, and that's you set container set on every term that you want to transform into an array.
Okay.
The only one this doesn't work on is at type, I believe. Is that true?
Okay. So that's fine if that's possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the alternative would be that would be consistent with what everything else we do is to allow container set to be defined at the top level of a context, and then you might be able to use container false within some property definition to override that for a particular property.
Yeah.
I mean, we could also just add a flag for keeping type as an array. That's really that important.
Seems a little too special purpose.
Yeah, I agree, but yeah. I mean, either you deal with the distinction between scalars and arrays, or you don't. So if you don't, then it's fine, in my opinion, if every property is an array.
Yeah.
And that's what the flag is for, in my opinion, at least.
Yeah, I can. I mean, from a. Yeah, I think it's better. I mean, if we have the flag, you can. Every usage of such data looks alike. I suppose it would be a bit odd to have a flag where, and then override that for some terms. I'm wavering on that again, because I've seen cases where most of the data should be in sets, but there are a bunch of properties which are really functional properties. Like Dublin Core identifier, perhaps, or similar publisher, possibly stuff like that. So the idea of top level container set and container false does provide much more fine grained general control.
We can already do that, though, right?
Except
we just do container set, except for type. But
yeah,
I mean,
but
how many people are going to do that issue?
But the,
I
we
think
can
we,
do the
inverse of that.
Well, you
we
can
do
it for type if you don't convert it to at type.
Yeah, then we can do it. But the, we can't do the inverse. If almost everything should be in a set, but I'm not. I don't feel too strongly about that. Having the flag is probably good enough.
I think the flag is the low hanging fruit. The better solution, perhaps in the long run, might be container set in the. In the context definition. But if we do that, I think we also probably need to allow container to be specified on type.
To be set to false,
And I don't know how much we should, you know, expand the language to do that stuff when we don't really have any really strong group of community or strong set of implementers that are requesting this feature. I mean, I think that it's fine to do the low hanging fruit at this point because it will at least address, you know, both Josh's case and the other case that we came up with. I don't know if we really need to do that much more than that.
No, I agree. I think I'm fine with just a flag because if lots of producers, publishers would come forth and say, hey, we want to be able to express our flags in our contexts because, say, we want others to be able to produce the exact same shape of our data using just our context, then we might look into the flags in general for Compact. And as we've already seen, we have numerous cases where the needs for compaction are so specific for the application that we can't at this point address them all for special container partitioning, for instance.
Well, what are you arguing then? Are you saying that we shouldn't put the flag in there now, or are you saying...
No, we shouldn't, because it's the simpler solution to the immediate problem. If we would end up with, say, 10 or 15 flags to compact, it reasonably suggests that we have mechanics which we should be able to express declaratively. But at this point, I'm fine with just the flag.
So let me go ahead and put this proposal in since we're over time right now.
Yeah.
The proposal is to add a flag to the compact and frame algorithms that turns off optimization of arrays with single items in them to single values in the output.
Sorry, François again. This is restricted to type, right?
No, it does it on across everything, all properties. So there are two things that came up. One of them is, we need to be able to do this for type, but then the second conversation that came up was, well, what about every other property? How do you just... You know, if you're writing code, the issue is when you're writing code, how does the code check to see if it's just a single scalar value or an array of values? And the argument was, well, what we should do is just add a flag to the compact call, so what you get back is all arrays, so that the way that you process the data is uniform across every attribute.
Okay, well, that sounds good.
Okay. All right. Plus one, minus one, François, and then we'll resolve. Okay. All right, and then I guess I'll also note that I don't know if there were any other proposals that we discussed in the past 15 minutes that could have gotten a more consensus than that. Okay, that's our call for this week. Thanks, guys.
I'm just putting something in just on tag about linked data versus RDF that has some general interest for us. It's worth reading too.
Okay. When is this? 8/23. So this was very recent.
Yeah. It just Jenny just posted the minutes, and I just happened to be that struck out at me.
Yeah. Certainly. Okay. Yes, that's good. We should definitely read all that.
Just a remark or an idea I had. I think that I'll put something in if I have the time. In our JSON-LD wiki, that's fine. That's a good place to place topics of interest. For instance, two topics: connect. We could write a wiki article.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
On that, just to get our thoughts down. And I had some general idea which I want to write there about the discussions we had on data shapes, where we discuss possibly deviating from the basic entity attribute value form for property parts, tuples, reverse properties, all of those things that have been bubbling around. I want to gather them. And I think the wiki is the good place to do that, right? But it's not really an issue.
Yeah, absolutely. Good. I think that's good. I mean, you could just put it in an issue, and we could track it that way. I mean, I think that's a perfectly fine way of doing it as well.
Yeah, but this will be more prose than should be in an issue. I think it would be quite just summarizing the various things and elaborating on the different perspectives that have come up during that.
Okay.
If I find the time, I hope so.
that sounds fine. Sounds great.
Great.
Okay, guys, anything else before we chat next week? Okay, thanks again for everyone's time, and we'll chat again next week.
Thanks, all.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks, Danny.